Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 10:47 a.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 6th. I am recording a little early today because I've got to head to the airport and I need to give myself a little bit of time to ensure I don't miss the plane. Well, when we look at what's going on the markets today, certainly the move that we've had in the Aussie dollar has now confirmed resistance in the region of the trend mean, and that sequence of lower rally highs has been in evidence now for over a year. When we zoom out and look at the weekly chart, then we can see that the 70 cent area has been an area of support previously, most particularly back in 2015, and it's going to have to bounce from that area again if we're not going to see a breakdown. The reason, of course, for this decline was because the RBA governor came out today and said that last year, they were talking about the risks being more balanced towards a rate hike, and now they're more evenly balanced. In other words, there's no way that Australia is going to be raising interest rates if nobody else is doing it either. And that, I think, is the big picture when we look at the global economy, that the appetite for raising interest rates has pretty much evaporated in the course of the last few months. And that removes a tailwind from the Australian dollar. It also, of course, removes a tailwind from the US dollar. But the simple fact of the matter is that some countries need a weaker currency more than others. There is no country wants a strong currency, but some do definitely pursue a weaker currency more than others. Australia is in that boat right now. That's despite the fact that commodity prices are ticking on the upside. When we look at the iron ore price in China, the Qingdao price is perhaps the best or the most reliable indicator we have. It's broken on the upside. There was a very clear wedging pattern, and now that has been resolved on the upside. Now, this is probably short-term in nature. Vale's production has certainly been impacted, and they are going to do whatever it takes to get that back online. Now, Bolsonaro in Brazil probably has some incentive to come out in favor of tighter regulation, at least on the safety front, and that is probably one of the factors that has inhibited the return to production quickly. But Brazil needs to be exporting iron ore, so they're not going to inhibit that for anything other than very short-term reasons and potentially more like sound bites than anything else. So the move that we're getting in iron ore right now is probably short-term in nature, but the much bigger picture is that it's a tight market. And when we look at the continuous commodity index, over the course of the last 3 years, or almost 3 years, it's been very range-bound. That's despite the fact that we've had a pop in a significant move last year in cobalt up and down. We've had a big move in oil, both up and down. We've had significant moves in lumber prices, again, both up and down. And yet, the continuous commodity index has done nothing but go sideways. We've had very significant moves on the downside for both coffee and sugar. And Arabica coffee prices are still right around the region of the dollar level. And at 105, they do look like they're starting to build support around here. And this is the lower side of what is really quite a long rangy pattern. And the same thing with white sugar traded out of the UK. It's been steadying from around this $300 area. These, are, of course, are major exports for Brazil as well. And the Brazilian real is stronger than the trend mean. But again, it's unlikely that Brazil is going to be raising interest rates anytime soon, particularly when we have slowing global growth. Well, Jim O'Neill was being quoted in here today saying that if we don't start to see this trend of slowing global growth turning around, then we are going to have a global recession. One of the things that I think people will be paying particular attention to is U.S. initial jobless claims, for the simple reason that you can't very well have a recession without without people becoming unemployed. And we did have a pop on the upside in response to the government shutdown in the USA. Now, I think it's quite likely that they're going to come to some form of agreement on the border wall that will allow them to come to an agreement about the keeping the government open beyond the 15th of February. But people will still be looking at this to make sure that it comes straight back down again, just like it did at the end of 2017, and indeed at the end of 2012. Those were very short-term pops on the upside. If, on the other hand, we start to see that these initial jobless claims figures are held, let alone trending higher, then that would be a very clear indication that we have more than short-term effects inhibiting the USA's economic growth. When we look at what's been going on in stock markets, then we certainly have a short-term overbought condition, but we're still seeing really very steady action. And the index, the S&P 500, is now back above the trend mean. The NASDAQ 100 is back above its trend mean. And the Russell 2000 is right in the region of its trend mean. Well, the Russell is arguably much more influenced by the health of the domestic economy. It's also now testing its sequence of lower rally highs. So this is an important area where it needs to be able to demonstrate that it can push through and up. Well, we may need to see some consolidation before that can occur. It's inevitable we're going to get some form of consolidation eventually. This has been a very impressive rebound. But the further it goes, the more likely it is that we're going to get some form of consolidation. And I think that has to be the base case, that markets do not go up in a straight line indefinitely. And the further this goes, the more likely it is that we're going to get some consolidation. When we look at some of the most iconic shares, then Google has continued to steady around this $1,000 area. But what it needs to do is to hold the move above 1,000. If it were to fail and sustain a move below 1,000, well, then that would be a completed top formation. When we look at, for example, Amazon, well, Amazon has been the buy the dips share, and now it is right in the region of the trend mean, and it was a little softer in here today. This has been a very tight range over the course of the last 6 weeks, and that's not characteristic for trading in Amazon since September. This range is relatively similar sized to those that we saw in July and June and May. So people will be conditioned to think that this is a normal $100 range. But what they've been mostly conditioned to expect from holding Amazon over the last few years is that once it goes through a $100 range, it breaks on the upside, not on the downside. If Amazon were to break on the downside, well, then that would also be a further reiteration that the U.S. consumer is perhaps not quite as healthy as everyone is assuming. One thing I certainly know from my wife's Amazon business is that everything is going swimmingly. So that at least gives us some insight into how sellers are doing on the Amazon platform. Her sales in January were up 60% when we did the final figures on January of last year. So that is a significant vote in favor of the health of the US consumer. Then, of course, we need to look at the banks. And the S&P 500 Banks Index is also right in the region of its trend mean. When we look at the regional banks index, which again is arguably much more influenced by the domestic economy, then it hasn't quite yet got back up to test the region of its trend mean. So again, I think we are at a rather important juncture here for these markets, that we have had a pullback and now we have had a very impressive rebound, but now we need to see a higher reaction low. That is going to be the real confirmation that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond short-term steadying. I think it is also interesting to keep an eye on a number of the individual sectors. The consumer staples sector has been pretty range-bound for 3 years, and it is now coming back up from the upper side of that range. This has been a lengthy consolidation, considering that the market had, or the index had been trending higher in a very rhythmic, consistent manner between 2009 and 2016. So we are now at a point where if this is a range rather than a peak, then we are going to have to continue to see that 500 area hold. Then we're definitely seeing a return to performance of cyclical sectors. The NASDAQ biotech sector is one of the most cyclical parts of the technology sector, and it is consolidating in the region of the trend mean right now. But of course, it's the mining sector is by far the most cyclical, and it has also started to steady here. Well, part of the reason for that is because of the relative strength we're seeing in iron ore, but copper prices are also steadying, and I think arguably that is more important. Copper is used in every country in the world, and there is a reason that they call it Dr. Copper, and the fact that it is now trading above the trend mean is really rather encouraging. So that is suggesting that there is real potential here for some easing. Whether that is going to be in the form of fiscal or monetary stimulus, or I think perhaps much more likely is that we're going to have both. That there is the scope for bipartisanship in the USA if they decide to go for an infrastructure build. And that, I think, is quite likely. Europe has got the European elections coming up, and there is a real potential that populist parties, which really emanate from the fringes of the political spectrum, are going to make significant inroads. So they're going to have a pan-European platform on which to air their views come June. So that is a potential threat to the whole austerity program that was introduced in Europe. If Europe dispenses with austerity, then that will represent an additional source of liquidity for this market. So that is also something that is potentially important for the global economy. And then, of course, we have China. China has been really pressuring the shadow banking sector. It's been cutting off successive rounds of liquidity, whether that is access to banking credit or to P2P lending, or then by allowing defaults, it puts some fear into investors, and then they cut off the avenue for issuing US dollar debt, and each one of those successive rounds has cut off access to liquidity for the shadow banking sector, so that they do have grounds now to claim job done, and therefore that also gives them room to be more accommodative. So when we think about what the outlook is, potentially that there is ample ability for central banks and governments to provide additional liquidity, then that could be a bullish factor if we do in fact start to see it coming through. The fact that we are getting this return to performance by the commodity sector is encouraging, because it suggests that investors are beginning to position themselves for somewhat firmer growth figures. And oil prices continue to steady within the range, and there's a very mild upward bias as it consolidates above the $60 area. That does hold out the prospect for an additional rally to unwind the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. I really think that we are in for a much more rangy environment in oil prices, but that range could be between $30 and $100, and arguably we're therefore mid-range. If we do get stronger global economic figures, then that will be positive for the oil price. So then that brings us to the outlook for bonds. And the Treasury price was not quite able to hold its advance in here today. There is a lot of additional supply that is coming up, but and therefore that should support yields. That when you have so much additional supply of bonds that are coming through, well, then that really should cause investors to demand a higher yield. Against that background, you have investors that have concluded that we are not going to see any additional rate hikes, and that the next big move is going to be on the downside. If that's the case, then we would start to see the stock market starting to roll over, and we'd see economic figures starting to deteriorate. As I've just said, though, that I think there is ample scope here for stimulus, and most particularly fiscal stimulus. Well, fiscal stimulus is bad for bonds, and that is, I think, one of the clearest points. But against all of those arguments, the Treasury price continues to hold this 121 area. And as long as it is holding that 121 area, then this is still looking like a consolidation. When we look at the trend over the course of the last 3 years, these bonds have been pretty jerky when they have rallied, but it hasn't sustained a move above the trend mean for anything like this amount of time since early 2016. So this is certainly a time to pay attention. They're definitely, despite all the arguments to the contrary, the fact that Treasury prices have been able to hold this move so far is a testament to demand dominance. And that, I think, is certainly still representative of investor anxiety that this rebound that we've had on Wall Street is still very short-term in nature. I think big investors are going to need to see some real evidence that the lows are in, and what we would need to see for that is going to be a higher reaction low. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.